On this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, I sit down with Kathy Fetke to uncover the lessons learned in syndication.
Hey Mavericks, this is Ava Baukamp, and this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks is brought to you by Legacy Impact Investors. We are an industrial investment firm located in cash flow country, the Midwest. We strive to shield off risk and beat inflation, all while producing predictable cash flow. We curate real estate investment opportunities for busy professionals and other real estate investors seeking passive income. To learn more about what we do and connect with me, go to www.legacyimpactinvestors.com.
Maverick, noun, unusual person, a visionary, leader, go-getter, an independent thinker. They see the vision for their life and pull that future towards them. With an unyielding belief that things can and must be better, they achieve what most won't. Innovative, influential, daring, and direct, with a remarkably high tolerance for taking calculated risk. A foe to the status quo. This is Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks. Your host, Neil Timmons, has been involved with over $300 million in real estate transactions. He's a published author, commercial property investor, and real estate syndicator. This show is for those who want to learn how to earn passive income through real estate investing. Now, here's your host, Neil Timmons.
Welcome to Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, where we provide you actionable steps for you to grow your passive income and become job optional. During this episode, you're going to get to discover the lessons learned in years of syndications. Now, for those of you who are new, I'm your host, Neil Timmons. I love passive income from real estate. Before I introduce you to today's Maverick, I want to make a request that at any point you like what you hear, well, give us a thumbs up and be certain to subscribe to the show. Never miss a valuable episode. You love what you hear, give us a written review and be certain to look at the description of this episode. We packed it with thousands of dollars in free resources. Now, today we've got the privilege to learn from somebody who's been in real estate now for over two decades. Prior to her career in real estate, she was involved in broadcasting. Ultimately, it all changed when she was at home with the kids and her husband was misdiagnosed. She'll share that story today. I would describe today's Maverick as someone who's absolutely passionate about helping investors achieve their financial goals. Today's Maverick, I've got Kathy Fetke here with me. Kathy, how are you?
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's so good to see you. Hey, say for the audience's sake, who are you? Where are you from? What do you do?
I am in California. Our business is Real Wealth, but we don't invest here in California. Our business at Real Wealth is helping people invest in markets nationwide where the numbers make more sense than they do here. So we help basically busy professionals build their portfolios either individually through the teams we have nationwide or through syndication.
That's terrific. Take me back to the beginning, your very first commercial property, apartments, whatever the asset class may be, the very first one that you bought. What was it?
Well, it was actually back in 2009 when the world was just economic world was crashing and or had already crashed, I should say. And land, you know, land at that time was just so cheap. Nobody wanted it. Builders had were going out of business left and right. Banks were failing. We had been up until that point helping people buy 1-4 unit housing nationwide, mainly Texas, but Florida, kind of in the cash flow states that were also growing. But when those markets crashed, we kind of pivoted and helped people buy foreclosures. Then we had to set up teams, kind of creating the turnkey system to fix those foreclosures up and get them ready. But also, somebody listened to my show. Amazing, right? But this developer was listening to the show and reached out and said, hey, I've been walking through the commercial division of Bank of America, and they are lined up hallways and hallways full of boxes of foreclosed subdivisions, commercial properties. There's no money out there. Banks were failing. Banks weren't lending. So he said, can you raise money? I said, I don't know. This is before people knew what syndication was, because you could just walk into a bank before that and get money. So he said, can you raise money back? He said, back in the 70s, I used to syndicate. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. So he said, well, I found this foreclosed townhome subdivision waterfront in Portland, and we can get it for $3 million. It is 27 waterfront townhomes where the loan had been $13 million alone. Probably the whole project was worth $20 million. And I said, well, let me see. I sent out an email to my list of investors and said, hey, anybody interested in investing in this? I raised the money in, I don't know, a few minutes.
Wow.
And then one very kind person reached out and said, there are laws about doing this and you're doing it completely wrong. You can't just send out an email and solicit. So they referred me to an attorney in San Francisco, and that attorney showed me how to create a PPM and an operating agreement and all the things you have to do it correctly. But yeah, that was our first commercial deal. So basically these townhomes were 70% complete. Okay. They were not finished. They didn't have their COs, but the bank failed. It went to the FDIC. We were able to buy them, finish them out, and sell them. And our investors made about 20% return during the dark, dark part of the recession.
That's absolutely incredible. Bring me current. What's the most recent project that you've completed?
Well, right now we are, well, one that's coming into completion, which has taken 10 years, was 5,200 lots.
Wow.
That we bought in 2012 when, again, land was just so cheap. We yeah. bought it for $12 million. It had been $160 million in escrow, and it's just north of Tampa. That had been designed for a golf course. Now we redesigned it to be a crystal lagoon so people can paddleboard and play in the water and have houses around the water and stuff. Yeah. That is now the largest crystal lagoon in the country. It's called the Murata. It's super cool.
Wow.
We're just closing that out. Our investors got 15% preferred return compounded for 10 years.
Incredible.
Profit. And they're going to do really well. So that one's just starting to close out. But ones that we're doing right now, I have a build-to-rent fund. I have a single-family rental fund. We're going to be doing some more construction because new supply is so desperately needed today.
Yeah. Between the first one you just described, where you got educated real quick about how to raise money, and the most recent one, which is Herculean effort to do 5,200 lots, is yeah. really incredible. You've learned a lot over the years. What are some of the top two, three things that you've learned over that time period?
Oh, I've learned so much. Yeah. I would say the biggest one is stay in your lane. It's very easy to get shiny object syndrome in real estate because everything's cool. You want to do tax liens. You want to do storage. You want to do multifamily, single family, short-term rentals, whatever. It's all great, right?
Yep.
What's not great is doing something you don't understand because all of those asset classes are unique. Storage is more operational. Multifamily is completely underwritten differently than other things. And if you don't understand it, you're going to get hurt or lucky, one or the other. The very first multifamily deal I did, I actually had a pretty good underwriter, but what he wasn't great was asset management. This was back in 2013. I really wish I had a better team on board at the time because I'd be the biggest apartment owner in the country right now because I started early. But then I ended early because I didn't understand the asset class well enough. I was really a 1-4 unit expert in sure. building new homes as well. But in this case, my asset manager didn't walk through every single unit. And that's just maybe something that not everybody would know, but you got to walk through every unit and every yep. unit needs to be inspected. It was 5 buildings. He looked through 4 buildings. They were all great. He skipped the 5th. And I think they did that on purpose. They were like, oh, they're all the same. Well, that 5th building ended up having a lot of trouble and ended up having mold. When the city wanted to come and remediate it, they wanted to tear out everything. And right. that produced more issues to the point where they shut down the entire apartment. Everybody had to leave. We had to redo the sewer lines to the street. I mean, everything to where my partner who brought me this deal left me with it. And I went to the bank and I said, you know what? I can't make this work anymore. Here's the keys. And this was in Indiana. And they said, we don't really want it either. So they reduced the loan by $1 million and we were able to kind of get through it, sell it. And it was hard and not, I think investors lost probably 20% of their capital. It could have been 100%. So we did our best, but it was again, an example of me not really knowing that asset class and my partner just not being somebody who was had that integrity to go to the end with me.
As a result of the things you learned in that situation, what have you done differently to vet partners?
Oh, my goodness, that's everything. People forget that when you have a partner, a business partner, a marriage partner, an investing partner, what they do, you are responsible for. And you just have to know that if they're not of high integrity and they do something wrong, you pay the price.
That's right.
So it is so important to know who your partners are. Now, I used to think, well, they have to have 30, 40 years experience. And I found out that's not even enough, because I had one partner who had 40 years experience in development. But when we were looking at the cash flow is really not what we thought. What's going on? We're digging in. Like, what's this expense? It turns out he was putting his private jet expenses on the company expenses for this deal. I'm like, well, that wasn't disclosed to investors, but you know what? Also, there was nothing said we couldn't. So he justified it as, well, I need to travel to see these projects. And anyway, bottom line, you got to be on the same page and you've really got to know what each other's doing and have control of the money.
Yeah.
But coming back to, what do I look for? Background checks, talk to people who've worked with them before. But more than anything, extreme due diligence. We're probably too extreme because I've turned down every single deal, you know, in commercial at this point. I'm like, I'm at an age where I can't take risk. I only work with the partners that have done a great job that I've worked with. And if somebody new comes along, we will put them through the ringer. And it's really on the due diligence of the project. Because even a good person who doesn't have any history, there'd be no way of finding out if they did anything wrong, they may not have the attention to detail that you need in these projects.
Yeah, I think that what you just said applies to past investors who are listening to the show about how do they select, what types of things they need to be doing to evaluate a general partner when they're putting their faith and confidence in somebody. And I think you said something else. You said, I wouldn't have said it like you. You said, I'm of the age where I don't have to do this. I think you're of the success level where you're at, where it's more important not to lose than it is to win more.
Yeah.
That protecting one's wealth for a lot of us and sustaining that to get through, certainly through cycles, is of the utmost importance.
Yeah, no, it really is. It's super painful to see people lose money. Yeah. And especially when I was the operator of some of those deals where people lost money, it's horrible. So another thing I would tell to investors is diversify. There's so many projects, there's so many good syndicators. Why put all your money in one deal? And I've seen that where people put $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 into one deal. That's fine if you have lots of money and maybe you have 5 million. So maybe it's still diversification for you, or 10 million. But if you're going to put that much money into a deal, please hire an underwriter to make sure that you truly understand the investment. This isn't like financial planning. It's not like you're going in your money in an index fund, you know, where there's a lot of regulation. These are super unregulated syndications, right?
Correct.
If you're going to put $500,000 or $100,000 or whatever, spend a couple hundred dollars on it and an underwriter to make sure you really understand the deal. It's not that bad. It's not that expensive.
Are you a passive real estate investor seeking financial freedom? Well, today's market's unique and it's ever changing. Now is the time to get educated on how to strategically invest in commercial real estate for long-term financial freedom. Grab your copy of How to Passively Invest in a Changing Economic Environment. Go to www.mavericksinvest.com. What's your investment philosophy today as you're looking at your build-to-rent portfolios and the single-family portfolios that you have in place? How's you leaning into that and by consequence away from various other asset classes?
Well, I've been doing this for 20 years. So I've been through a few cycles, a few seasons. I've seen the ups, I've seen the downs. I've seen how different asset classes are affected by different economic cycles. So if you go back to 2008, we know it was the residential housing market that got lambasted during that, right? Because of bad credit, bad loans, loans that anyone could get where they didn't qualify, and then those payments adjusted. So when those payments adjusted, people couldn't afford it and floor fell out of the housing market, right? Today, starting, I guess it was 2012 or so, Dodd-Frank came in and made lending really, really, really difficult. So for the past 10 years, anyone who's gotten a residential home, anything 1 to 4 units, they have had to qualify. They put money down. The people who borrowed the money have the highest FICO scores we've seen. They're locked into low rates. The prices have gone up. They have not refi and taken cash out for the most part. So today's homeowners are not the same as last decade. And this is a confusing point that people just don't get. They think we have another housing crash. It couldn't be a more different market. Today's homeowners are locked into 30-year fixed rate loans, 70% of them under 4%. They have the lowest housing payment ever compared to their wages. Homeowners are in the best shape they've ever been, and they're people with high credit who have a history of paying their bills. So you've got, and they've got all this equity. So the idea that there's a housing crash is almost laughable. And every time someone says it, or there's like stories like, oh my gosh, the short-term, I don't know if you saw the Airbnb bust. There's going to be a million Airbnbs that are going to all in one day get sell on the same day, and it's going to flood the market. And I got to tell you, that would be the best thing that happened to housing, to have new supply come on.
Correct.
Builders stopped building or really slowed it down after the Great Recession. Like I said, they were going bankrupt. Banks weren't lending. It's taken them a long time to catch up. It's horrible timing. The demographics in 2008 was the Gen Xers, tiny generation. Today, it's the millennials, massive generation. Between the ages of 29 and 34, it's the biggest group of people ever. And they want to buy a house and start a family and have dogs, and the supply is not there. So all these people are comfortably living in the homes that they own with comfortable payments. So the only thing, like the next phase, is like, we got to bring on new supply.
Right.
So being in the home building world and build to rent and partnering with builders to bring on new supply. And then also with my single family rental fund, we're buying homes that first time home buyer wouldn't be able to buy because a bank wouldn't finance it. Hmm. Or first time home buyer just can't buy it with today's rates. Yep. So we're raising money, buying those homes all cash. Maybe they're missing a kitchen or something that would have a bank not finance it. Yep. We buy cash. We're buying them for 50% discounts right now. It's insane.
Wow. Yeah.
Fixing them up because there's just not the competition like there was 18 months ago. Now we have supplies, now we have materials, we have contractors, people need work,
right?
Because things have changed. So now we're renovating these properties for $20,000 to $30,000. We're getting homes for $150,000 or less all in.
Yeah.
And rents are coming at the 1% or more ratio. And it's the time. That's all I can say. Like, the timing is really on our side for what we're doing in build to rent and buying older homes.
It looks so different than 2006, 7, 8. It's night and day different.
Night and day.
What are you most excited about in the next year for you and your team?
I'm just really excited. I have to say, I suffered from FOMO and was just watching all these people get into multifamily with no experience and making millions of dollars when I failed twice. I had two multifamily that just didn't go well. I'm like, oh my gosh, these people are coming in the market and they're just making millions. This is so unfair. So I kept trying and it just wasn't working. I didn't have the team. I just was like, I don't understand it well enough.
Yeah.
What I understand is what I know is 1-4. I've been helping thousands of investors build their own portfolio units, and we've been building homes. So just, this is my market. So I'm super excited because to me, the housing market, people don't get it. People are still thinking that there's going to be a housing crash or something. Right. And what they don't know is, oh my gosh, like 6 million homes shy of what we need. And the demographer that I just interviewed on The Real Wealth Show said, we're actually 25 million homes shy if you fast forward over the next decade. Like, the population's growing and the housing is not.
Yep.
So I'm just super stoked to finally be like, okay, with just focusing on what we do. Now, I'm not going to say I won't do multifamily if a deal comes that I can't pass up. So far, I just gun shy and haven't seen anything that rocked my world. So I'm excited to keep doing our funds, keep building homes and keep syndicating. And I've got a book coming out with Bigger Pockets on scaling your business.
Wonderful.
Writing that with my husband. I'm a host of one of their podcasts too. And so lots of good things coming. And I got a grandbaby coming.
Second one, right? Second one on the way.
Second one. Yeah, love it.
That's terrific. The Real Wealth Podcast, you are a pioneer in podcasting. You were doing it before podcasts were even cool. How many years now has it been?
I was doing it before podcasts were a thing, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I had a radio show in San Francisco. My background's in broadcasting. I worked in the news. When I became a mom, I kept a radio show on the weekends just to stay connected to the industry. And it was back then, 2003, that Rich got misdiagnosed, told he had 6 months to live from skin cancer that they thought had spread. Turns out they were wrong. But in the time that we didn't know, I was a stay-at-home mom, not working. So yeah, he had an iPod and he got a little message on that iPod that said, we are now accepting podcasts. And nobody knew what that was, but he took my San Francisco radio show and uploaded it. I became one of the very first podcasters. And overnight, I went from having a San Francisco audience to an international audience. It was really cool. That was kind of how all that started.
That's incredible. And you've been doing that ever since and making a huge impact in a big way. We'll make sure we put the link below to your podcast. It'll be in the show notes for everybody. Let's do this. I want to move on to the final segment, what I call the final four. In your opinion, what do you think holds most passive investors back from hitting their personal next level, whatever that happens to be?
Honestly, I think it's a lack of focus and a lack of planning, because usually passive investors are, I'm just guessing, I'm going to speak for my audience at Real Wealth, that they're busy professionals. They have jobs. They might be tech people in the tech industry where they're working 60 hours a week, in the entertainment industry where they're probably working even more than 60 hours a week, right, or they're professional athletes and they're just busy. People are busy who make money, unless they get a large inheritance. And then maybe it's just kind of freaking out, like, what do I do with this money, and not, right, just not knowing what to do. So that would probably be, I would say, two things: busyness and just confusion. Right. So what I try to help people with is to get that clarity. And the clarity starts with the end goal. Like, what is it that you want in the end? How much passive income do you want and why? Do you want to quit your job? And if so, when? And what would you be doing with your time and so forth? When you can get that end vision, then you can set up the plan for how much passive income you need to have that vision. But again, a lot of people just don't take that time to do that.
What are you passionate about outside of real estate?
I have an addiction to surfing. And I told Rich this morning, you know, there's worse addictions. But what's funny is we live a couple of miles from my favorite surf spot. And when I surf, I get really tired afterwards. So then if I surf at 6 a.m, sometimes I'll go over the waterfalls of this big wave and like get tossed around and my brain gets all... So anyway, I'll show up at 9 o'clock to work. I just can't focus because... I'm tired after that. So anyway, Rich is like, it sounds like an addiction. I'm like, yeah, but there's worse ones. So just deal with it. I love surfing. I love hiking, skiing. Love my grandbabies, my family, my kids, and my, of course, my husband.
Your favorite book?
Favorite book. From a personal perspective, I know this is going to sound corny, but Getting the Love You Want. It sounds corny, but it really is helpful in defining how to have a great relationship. And at the end of the day, that's really what matters, is love in your relationship. So love that book.
No doubt. Your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
It's raising your financial intelligence. I truly believe that when people have enough money to live life the way they want to and have control of their time and how they spend it, they're just happier. They're happier people, better parents. So I am dedicated to helping raise financial awareness so that people can become more independent.
Well, you've been doing it a long time and you do a fantastic job at it. This is a wonderful conversation, Kathy. I appreciate it. It's an honor to have you on the show. So thanks for making the time. For people who want to find you, they want to follow you, they want to connect with you, where can they go? What should they do?
Realwealth.com is where you can find us. We have over 500 webinars. It's all free. It's free to join. You can talk to one of our investment counselors. We can help refer you to teams across the country who can help you acquire property. We are brokers, so we make a broker-to-broker fee. There's just no fee to that. Grow Developments is where you can find out about my funds, my single family rental fund. And then, of course, the Real Wealth Show podcast.
Kathy, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
To our listeners, pat yourself on the back. You guys have made it to the end of the show, and most people never finish what they start. If you receive value from today's show, be sure to share it on LinkedIn, your Facebook page, or your social media platform of choice. Subscribe to never miss a valuable episode in the future. And if you found value in today's episode, give us a thumbs up with a positive review. If there's a particular topic you'd like to hear about, well, I want to hear from you. Shoot me a message on LinkedIn. The link to my profile is below in the show notes. You can connect with me there for more valuable content.